switch off now. There's no sex in this program, unless you count the Sun newspaper's dirty words. But there will be a great deal of violence. I'm going to get down there in the gutter, where so many of our journalists crawl. And for maybe the fifth time in my life, conduct an argument in the sort of personal terms that have become the norm across such large and fetid tracts of our cynical, venal, genuinely prostituted and foreign-owned press. Touch and go, though it has been, and through an often messy, occasionally shameful personal life, I've managed to gather around myself some shreds of self-respect. So what I'm about to do is perhaps less obviously foolhardy than it otherwise might seem. And what I'm about to do is to make a provenly vindictive, an extremely powerful enemy, a sort of serial killer, metaphorically speaking, who has more vials of poison at his command than there are chemist shops in this troubled land. This program's not going out live, so at least I know that I shall reach the end of it in more or less one piece. That's not quite a joke, it's more a nervous simper. Because the enemy in question is that drivel merchant, global huckster, and, so to speak, media psychopath, Rupert Murdoch, a Hannibal the cannibal, who is in many important ways a deal more powerful in Britain than our own schoolboy parliament, its minority elected government, and even its bumbling Mr. Pooter of a prime minister. A government, God help us, that the Murdoch press did so much, so dishonestly, to put into power, mostly by means so aslant, so tilted, so bent and untrue, that they by definition open the trapdoor under the word democracy. If we cared tuppence about our own culture, we ought to make sure the next time Murdoch sets foot in this his fiefdom, he should be arrested and put on public trial. Okay, let me admit straight away, in case any of his many lackeys and lickspittles fail to point it out, including the tax-avoiding Andrew Knight, the Murdoch chief executive in charge of a newspaper which inadvertently described the method he uses as a tax dodger's charter. Let me admit, I'm only taking this risk to my already apparently tattered reputation because I've been stung into it by some of the personal attacks on the alleged sensationalism and bad faith of my own writing. Another way, perhaps, of conceding more than a due measure of paranoia and self-pity. I have a chance which most people who are abused by these papers, I have that chance to answer back. So be it. See, most of us in this secretive, chronically misgoverned, greatly tormented, currently very confused, but dear, dear land of ours, would pick up a cudgel only at the very last moment. It's a fascinating mixture of genuine tolerance, amiability, and polite lethargy, which has made us what I still believe, against the odds, to be the most civilized nation on earth. Well, I've reached that late last stage. It's more than time to lift the cudgel. And I know who it is and what it is that I want to bludgeon. In less than an hour's time on this channel, there'll be another episode of Lipstick on Your Collar. Let darkness fall upon the land, and England's mountains green be splattered with used condoms, for the series is written by that lecherous beast known to the toilet paper papers as Dirty Den, or by Murdoch's salacious news of the world as television's Mr. Filth. or in an endearing reference to what must be my other less priapic illness by that subliterate, homophobic, sniggering rictus of a lout, Gary Bushell of Murdoch's The Sun, as old flaky. Very lipstick on my dipstick, slurps Bushell, with the kind of saloon bar leer that presumably adds some kind of balance to what one might charitably call his talent, all of which you could just about press into that little space you get when you lift a plastic lavatory brush from its holder. So if I squelch a little away from the ever-present Murdoch swamps, there's, for example, the would-be censor, Nicola Tyra, who's presently building a mini-career on introducing me and my work, all of which I dare to say here and now aspires to a level of truth and moral seriousness conspicuously lacking in her own opportunistic diatribes. Nicola Tyra is a part-time journalist with part-time eyesight who has, first in the Daily Telegraph, then in the Daily Mail, and then, despite being corrected on Radio 4, described repeated blows delivered by a man upon a young woman at the end of the first episode of Lipstick on Your Collar, followed, she says, by rape. Quote, in a scene of video nasty would be hard put to rival, she claims. The heroine Sylvia has her face reduced to violet pulp by her husband. Madam, take yourself off to an optician, preferably on your way back from a psychotherapist. Not only did she or you or anyone else not see, quote, repeated blows, unquote, she or you or anyone else did not see one single blow. I repeat, not one. And it certainly was not a rape that followed, even though, oh my God, do I have to say this? Even though the scene was meant to live darkly within the miseries, entrapments, manipulations, and wider implications of so many of the ways in which men still treat women. Sorry, I'm not going to shuffle sideways or backwards to deny the provenance of fiction, to go into the heart of darkness in order to try to see the light, if we hunger to know where God dwells in holy grief, then we must look to where and how the abused, the weak, the wounded, and the desperate ply their lives. Religion is not the bandage, it's the wound. Then we must look to where and how the abused, the weak, the wounded, and the desperate ply their lives. Religion is not the bandage, it's the wound. And in this secular age, when more than ever before the money men outside the temple try to own the insides of our heads, drama is one of its last expressions. Now, unlike Mrs. Tyra, I've never seen a video nasty. But I do know that one of the crucial differences between right and wrong is the ability to distinguish between truth and lies. Now, that's not an issue which especially troubles most of our newspapers. But I do know that one of the crucial differences between right and wrong is the ability to distinguish between truth and lies. Now, that's not an issue which especially troubles most of our newspapers. Here's a tiny example, which I give only because it's somewhat naturally sitting at the front of my mind. The Daily Mail illustrated Nicola Tyra's myopic shock horror j'accuse shrieks with a big picture captioned, quote, stomach-churning sexual violence, the sadistic scene from Lipstick on Your Collar. Now, ever since the Zinoviev letter, or its support for the black shirts, or the thank you very much knighthood for its then-editor David English for chucking every half-truth like a half-brick at Mrs. Thatcher's opponents, we all ought to know what passes for editorial probity on the Daily Mail. But perhaps you should know that the picture in question was lifted from quite another scene altogether. And the raised fist in shot was about to hit a saucepan lid. Very appropriate, you might think, since every day of the week, every week of the year, there's an awful lot of cooking going on within newsrooms and editorial offices. Standards of Britain's tabloid press, so they're not ones which would be allowed within shooting distance of a television newsroom, which is why so many of these papers spend so much time attacking television in general and the BBC in particular, and so getting into our heads through their sensationalism that they actually physically interfere with the processes of participation which we, one of the most closed of the Western democracies, the one thing we most need is that freedom of information, that cleanliness of ownership that would allow us to at least know that the facts we're being given and the opinions that we are being given are part and parcel of our own mature decisions to be full citizens in a full democracy. There is an avid, wet-mouthed, down-market slide that began its giddiest descent on the day marauding Rupert Murdoch first left his paw marks on our shores in acquiring the Sun, and dragged so many others towards the sewers where too many of his too craven employees have their natural habitat. But there are thousands of abused people who have absolutely no way of answering back. Those people who, owning so much of our press, actually narrow down the options which in any civilized, mature democracy mean multiplicity of ownership, someone not telling you every day what to think in language that is mostly slanted. Do you think that doesn't have any effect upon the nature of our democracy? Do you think that has no effect upon the way we think about politics? And if we start cynically thinking about politics, cynically dismissing our politician because they are the creatures of these people, then what we're doing is damaging ourselves. And this quotidian ooze of ordure has made many, and there are many, fine, diligent, decent journalists, it's made them ashamed of their profession. But worse, it's led to truly dangerous suggestions that Parliament should enact fresh laws to curb the excesses of our debased tabloids. Now, this is important. Let's have nothing whatsoever to do with any law which tries to define what shall and shall not be in our newspapers. Even one hesitant step down that road begins a journey that no society wishing to be free can ever safely contemplate. There are better ways to stop the rot, as I shall suggest in a few minutes, when I shall propose a more effective rat trap. But first, masochistic sweetie pie that I am, let me entertain you with a few more examples of the style of our worst tabloids, as culled from their response to, yes, you guessed it, lipstick on your collar. And I'm sorry to bring any of this stuff into your living rooms. And I've got no interest in advertising some kind of chemical fresh air spray. But the Daily Star, oh, please hold your nose, the Daily Star said that the series is, quote, dirty, dense, pervy peep show. This, mind you, is but a few column inches away from almost half a page of lucrative ads for the real desolations of telephone sex with, well, here's a few of the less obscene ones. Horny, kinky sex sounds. Lift my skirt. Wear my panties. Bend for the boss. And listen in to people who are talking so dirty you won't believe what you're hearing, double exclamation mark. Now, the poor devil who's abusing me as a dirty pervert has his wages paid by employers who are, at least in my dictionary, by definition, barely one remove, if that, from being... Lawyers are reading this stuff. It's not live. I won't say the word, but you know what I mean. Let those dogs return to their own vomit. I ought to pick on somebody my own size. Medved's book, Hollywood versus America, is a well-written and not always illiberal attack on the sordid, people-despising values of parts of the Hollywood ethos. Ironically enough, it's this same slick, money-grabbing, essentially desolate view of human life, which Rupert Murdoch is trying to export around the world, financed by great puddles of debt. Medved's attack on Hollywood as a poison factory is a double-edged scalpel in the clumsy hands of passionate free marketeers, Thatcherites, Reaganites, and other such ignorant armies of the night, slouching and sleazing towards Babylon. Yes, no question. Much of Hollywood is indeed a sink of squalor. I've been there. I've struggled there. In a have a nice day threnody, where it's easier to pull a gun than light a cigarette. In the dead of night, you can hear rats voraciously nibbling at the tops of the palm trees. And in the far darker dead of day, you can hear another sort of rat voraciously nibbling on the breakfast meeting carrot cake. Cannibalism, sadism, fetishism, Thatcherism, endless sex, endless violence, blown away bodies emptied of their souls, any or every blasphemy against the human spirit committed solely in the name of the dollar, which has "In God We Trust" written across its middle. Don't be too envious. We're busily building the same kind of society here, run by the same sort of people, with the same sort of ends. But those who believe entirely in the market, that one-eyed God, now wreaking vengeance on our vandalized and desperate communities, they ought to know, in the coldly implacable logic of their heretical faith, exactly what they should do about these violent and pornographic excesses. Nothing. Nothing whatsoever. They cannot, in their shrunken ideology, legitimately interfere with the freedom of the most capitalist of all capitalist businesses, showbiz, to seek the maximum return by whatever legal means it can get on its investment. The result is what you see on the top shelves of the video stores, or when you stain your soul in opening Murdoch's Sun. There's a fat book out at the moment, which I hope you will read, entitled Murdoch by William Shawcross. The fact that Mr. Shawcross may have been seduced just a little by the saturnine charms of the Demon King makes the story even more compelling, even more alarming. Detail upon detail over almost 600 pages show how Murdoch grew and grew and grew into the enormous toad who croaks at all our doorways and all our windows and in all our living rooms. The book demonstrates what is virtually a catalogue of deceit, broken promises, bullying. And as Ian Aitken says in the London Review of Books, and I quote, quote, enough facts about his conduct to hang him several times over, unquote. Now, I don't believe in capital punishment, even for those who seek to pollute the insides of our heads. So, in my mercy, I suggest that if Murdoch were to be strung up, he should be cut down while still alive and left to croak out expletives in something of the foul-mouthed style of Kelvin McKenzie, the sharp little oaf who edits The Sun. Now, Shawcross's very readable book, it should be sent to every MP, in case any of them imagine themselves to be much more than pawns on someone else's board. They would then learn how such a raucously loyal Thatcherite wriggled out of the already minimal cross-ownership safeguards of Thatcher's Broadcasting Act. Talk about quid pro quo. Even Mark Thatcher, with all his millions, he could navigate himself somewhere towards the right conclusion. Murdoch was able to keep all his newspapers and yet still buffet and bamboozle his way into British television as well. British television, according to Murdoch, and therefore according to his slanted newspapers, and therefore according to so many in the never especially upright party he's done so much to keep in power. British television is elitist and paternalistic. He says he's, quote, busting the British broadcasting cartel. Be warned. It's been the public service ethos that gave us the least worst television in the world. And the BBC is the one British institution that really works. And ITV, at least before this botched auction bugaboo, has always been partly defined in the same public service terms. A paternalism, yes, a compromise word, of course, used to be part of the thinking of the old Tory party that has been blown apart by the market radicals. But call it what you will, we need some barriers to delay or deter the vandal, and to insist that the dollar and the pound are not the only measures of human culture. And to insist that the dollar and the pound are not the only measures of human culture. So, let's begin by properly enforcing cross-ownership provisions so that a Murdoch or his clones either has his TV or his newspapers. But more, if we really want to clean up some of the things which so contaminate our democracy and our values, and so diminish our own sense of citizenship in our own government and in our own culture, then please don't let's enact laws about what should or should not be in our newspapers. Let us enact laws about who owns them. First, no newspaper should own any part of any television company and vice versa. Secondly, no person or group should own more than one daily, one evening, and one Sunday paper. Now, that's very simple. It's very hygienic. It's very straightforward. It's very just. And if we are, we're in the state at this moment of moral panic about our own society. Now, I think of all the simplest things that we could most immediately do and at one stroke immeasurably improve the validity of our democracy and its defenses against those who abuse it, and at one stroke immeasurably improve the validity of our democracy and its defenses against those who abuse it, is to enact these laws about the ownership of the media that most closely affects the way we think and decide. In short, Murdoch, go home, wherever that is.